This is 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Donald Trump's successful election campaign this year highlighted fault lines of class, gender, and race in American society. The differences that polarized much of the country at large were also reflected within the nation's biggest single religious denomination, Catholicism. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking with Maryville College's Tricia Bruce. She's the co-editor of a collection of essays designed to identify those divisions and suggest ways to bridge them. When this book came out, you said you and your co-editors on the project had no idea how timely it would be because the Catholic Church in the U.S. is reflecting the divisions within the broader American population. And I wonder if you'd tell us how so. What are some of those major ways that one is reflecting the other?
Well, obviously, in an election year, some of these issues around whether it's social issues, cultural issues, or debates about how we live out our lives in our day-to-day communities and also together as Americans are really going to come to a head in an election year. And so we knew when we were bringing together these voices around some of the issues that impact the Catholic Church in particular, and perceived polarization in the church, we thought we might see these play out in the coming year in 2016, knowing the election was coming. As it turns out, indeed, we did see quite a few of these issues come up. And so we're hopeful, too, that the work in this book is going to help to contextualize that conversation in a longer frame also.
What are some specific examples, like where you see, maybe it's not a one-to-one comparison, but at least a reasonable comparison where you're seeing a division within the Catholic Church that is directly reflective of something we're seeing in the broader American population at large?
Well, some of the key issues that tend to establish tension in the church come around issues of authority, issues of gender, issues of sexuality. And in the Catholic Church, that plays out over debates about leadership or debates about who is included and how to live one's life. And certainly the contributors in this book spoke to those issues in their chapters. And in the broader American public, those kinds of issues, too, came up in the election season. Deep debates about how we can, as a racially diverse society, in this case, America is moving toward that majority-minority status. And so how is America reconciling its extremely diverse population? The church, too, the Catholic Church is the largest religious denomination in the United States, and it, too, is increasingly diverse, especially along the lines of race as well as immigrant status. And so we heard that in the election season, and we hear that in parishes and in dioceses as leaders are trying to negotiate how to be inclusive across all these lines of difference.
There are other ways in which the church is divided along lines that appear to have subsided or be subsiding in other parts of the culture, and I want to use as my example sexual orientation, where there has been a pretty significant shift in the American public in the last several years, more toward the positive end of this, and we're seeing this issue being litigated out through the court system, somewhat through legislation, and it seems to be less and less of a hot button than it was, say, 10 years ago. But there are some struggles still on how to address that within the context of Catholicism.
One of the chapters in the book that's by Brian Flanagan is someone who speaks to this, saying that part of the key in thinking about polarization in the Catholic Church, or more broadly, has to do with, in some ways, diagnosing the issue. You know, you want to identify what it is it that is going on. And he points especially to the pain, the deep emotional pain that is experienced by not only LGBT folks in the church, but also those who are connected to them in various ways, as family members or friends or community, shared community members. And the way that Brian talks about it is that once we can understand where the pain points are, then it's only there that healing begins. And he especially distinguishes between a cure versus healing. He talks about healing carrying more meaning for people. And so certainly this is an issue that the church is grappling with in terms of recognizing a particular doctrinal stance, but then also recognizing the various ways in which people in the church live that differently and perhaps see themselves in a different relationship to that doctrinal reality.
How do these divisions manifest? And what I mean by that is if you're a typical parishioner, How are you hearing and seeing these issues presented? Is it from your fellow parishioners in the pews? Is it from the pulpit? Where are these typically coming from?
I have two responses to that question. One is that you may not be seeing them, and here's why. You know, a lot of our American communities, whether it's among Catholics or otherwise, are deeply sorted and filtered. The journalist Bill Bishop writes about this, and sociologists have written about this too. But we self-select into communities that become echo chambers for our ideas. We tend to live in neighborhoods with others who share our class backgrounds, share our race backgrounds. That is lived out in Americans' religious congregations as well, and certainly in parishes. So to some extent, we are hearing the things that we want to hear. We are choosing parishes and communities where we feel comfortable, so there's an elective affinity. Clearly, this has an impact on dividing or fragmenting our experience of the church and of America more broadly. People do hear about them, though, and recognize them, especially when we hear it come through from what might be considered elites, elite voices, or voices of the media, leaders in the church, or politicians who are highlighting in an exacerbated way these binary, and this spectrum that is very binary, meaning it has a left side and a right side. And it may or may not actually reflect the reality on the ground, but it's through that public discourse that Catholics and others begin to see their world as deeply fragmented, which can be very harmful. One of the chapters in our book is by a social worker who writes from his own experience, talking about the scars, the wounds of polarization that he has personally experienced. And so these things can, once known, these things can be deeply felt and deeply painful.
This election year saw something of a splintering of what is typically called the religious right. It's religious people who typically vote for Republican or conservative candidates. There were some real struggles within religious circles over Donald Trump in particular, and a lot of argument over whether he was the kind of guy religious conservatives could back. How did that debate play out within the Catholic community in 2016?
Catholics, I think for many Catholics, found themselves deeply conflicted, as were many Americans when we look at the polling on both candidates. But Catholics were really trying to situate themselves in terms of their what is right. You know, in this case, we had a vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, a Catholic, and then Mike Pence, also Catholic background. And so Catholicism comes out in a real visible way into the conversation, and yet there's also not a clear line for Catholics. So I think that, you know, there was no traditional voting bloc, as might be expected or seen in years past among Catholics. And moreover, some real debates among Catholics themselves that reflect this kind of polarization and also reflect the real diversity of the church. You have an increasing Latino population among Catholics. And that racial diversity, class diversity, as well as generational diversity, I think shows some different interpretations and different decisions when it comes to going to the polling booths.
Much as we saw among the American population in general. Those are some of the same lines that we've been covering on the journalism side of it, of age, of class, of reputation of elitism or not. That sounds like a very close parallel between the American population at large and what you're describing as happening within Catholic voters.
Absolutely. And we know that this is not born of just an election year, but also is reflecting some issues that have been around for some time. You know, many of the contributors in our volume are referring back to things that happened some decades ago and yet still have shaped the experience and the conversation within the Catholic Church. And that said, there are many places and ways in which there's great solidarity, both among Catholics and among Americans at large, if the conversation can get reframed.
To draw another parallel, but this time to places outside the United States, we've seen a lot of the political questioning and reshifting going on in other countries, from the British exit vote to political changes in the Philippines and the Asia-Pacific region. A lot of uncertainty going on around the world. Politically, people are concerned about who's doing the leadership and who's going to be making the decisions. We've been talking a lot about how those divisions are reflected here in the U.S. and in the Catholic Church. Are we also seeing those divisions in the Catholic Church globally?
That is a great question. And this particular book focused especially on how Americans are negotiating these kinds of questions. But clearly, even just looking at the American church, there's a real global connection. I mean, the church itself stakes a claim for great unity across national borders and divisions. The church is also increasingly characterized by Latino and Asian immigrants, especially from who are first-generation immigrants. And so the global connection is there. And I think it's fair to say, too, when we think about issues of polarization, they have global roots also in the sense of there are different realities on the ground for Catholics, America versus elsewhere, and the church is dealing with different realities in different places, and so sometimes the priorities may shift depending on the pain that is being felt. You know, certainly the vote for Brexit was different in London versus other more rural areas where folks were facing different issues, and I think for Catholics, too, it's such a diverse and yet unified church that sometimes the conclusions folks draw can be polarizing.
Now, the book, I should point out, doesn't just sit back and complain and tell the Catholic Church, all right, here are all your problems, sit back and listen to this. It also offers what might be possible solutions, or at the very least, some methods by which Catholics can begin to bridge these intra-church divides. Tell me about some of those proposed solutions. Where do we begin?
One of my co-editors, Charlie Camosi, really emphasizes that, in fact, you know, our unity is not distinct from solidarity, and our diversity is not distinct from solidarity. And there's a way in which even difference can play out in ways that don't have to be polarizing. One of the chapters in the volume, Nicole Flores, writes about the notion of aesthetic solidarity, and she really tackles head-on the question of racial division in the church and draws on examples from recent protests that have happened among Catholics and among her students. And she says there's still a way by doing activities together that perhaps emphasize beauty, emphasize commonality, in this case, emphasize common advocacy, where people can find points of unity that bring them together. And also, there are many folks in the book who focus on ways to shift the conversation so it's not just a binary conversation. Another contributor in here, Hosman Ospino, writes about, in some ways, the missing middle or the experience of Hispanic Catholics in particular, and how the concerns of polarization, the concerns of left-right, are not their concerns. And to frame the conversation that way is to miss the very impact and struggle of issues related to class or labor or to you know, things across the board. Likewise, another chapter by Susan Crawford Sullivan writes of her own parish, and she says, these issues are not what we're thinking about. It has to do with our families. It has to do with the daily grind, balancing, juggling the struggles that we have as everyday Catholics. And so I think in each of these spaces, we see that there is something underlying the what might be perceived as polarization, but is in fact a deep commonality around identity, around common good, around collective struggle. And the extent to which we can identify that and diagnose it, that's the place where real, genuine conversation can happen across these lines of difference.
You know, one thing that strikes me as you're talking about that is just my observation, admittedly anecdotal from social media, let me point that out,
yes,
is that there are so many people who don't want to hear about the other side. I'm not interested in what this other person has to say. I'm going to mute them. I'm going to unfriend them. I'm going to do whatever on social media because I don't like what they have to say. It's one thing to identify problems and then suggest some ideas where people can talk and can come together. But if you have a resistant population, you're not going to get very far. And I wonder what your concerns, either personally or professionally, as the editor on this, or one of the editors on this book, what are your concerns that these messages in the essays are going right out into deaf ears?
That is deeply a concern, of course. I mean, I think one of the goals of the book with myself and Mary Ellen Konichna and Charlie Camosi was, in fact, to bring together voices that aren't normally in the same book or in the same room. And that includes not only voices in terms of a political spectrum, but also in terms of disciplinary spaces. You know, there we have bishops that have contributed in this book. We have social workers, we have academics, sociologists, theologians. And so we were intentional in trying to get different voices together. But you're absolutely right that if you look at whether it's our social media feed, whether it's the type of newspapers we read, this is something that Michael Pepperd points out in his chapter, and also Elizabeth Tennedy writes about millennials. You know, this is really shaping how we read and interpret the whether it's the Catholic Church or otherwise. And so there is an urgency there to get outside of our spaces that are comfortable and begin to feel uncomfortable a little bit. So part of it is indeed a challenge, you know, although I will say anecdotally from my experience, you know, my neighborhood is a mix of folks of a variety of political persuasions and religious persuasions and otherwise. But, you know, that chili fest that we have every year, mm-hmm. or these, you know, excuses to get together for ladies' night or whatever it is, these are moments where I just cherish the opportunity to share in stories and struggles and talks about family and work. And to me, those are the kinds of spaces that can really cut through what might look like an otherwise very polarized reality.
Tricia Bruce is an associate professor of sociology at Maryville College. She is also a co-editor of the collection of essays, Polarization in the U.S. Catholic Church, Naming the Wounds, Beginning to Heal. Dr. Bruce, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you.